Hey guys, and welcome to episode 117 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now this is another story episode, and I interview Marco Maggioni. Marco is from Italy, and he wrote his story for the website a little while ago now, and I really enjoyed his story. He comes from a very meditation-focused background. He's done, as he gets into this story, he did medication for many years. He did CBT, ERP, and he still uses ERP. But he found meditation particularly helpful for him to be able to detach from the thoughts, bring more kindness into his awareness around his thoughts. And he really explains that. We talk about, obviously, his story, some ways of doing meditation, the importance of compassion and kindness. And he really breaks down, I guess, the psychology and the thinking behind meditation. And much like ERP, how it goes against kind of our natural instincts to react to thoughts. And when you do something like ERP and things like meditation, it feels unnatural because you're kind of going against that natural urge. But we get into the kind of the psychology behind that. And I really found it interesting. He just is a great guy, gives some really good advice. And if you've been thinking about meditation or you currently do meditation, I think this episode will give you some more guidance and help. And even if you don't want to do meditation, I think his story is quite interesting. And the way he looks at recovery is very refreshing. I thoroughly enjoyed it. He has a YouTube channel around meditation as well, so I'll put links in the show notes. And if you want to become a member of the OCD Stories, you can head over to theocdstories.com/join. That's theocdstories.com/join. And Kimberly Quinlan, therapist, did a loving kindness meditation for my members last month, and you can get access to that if you become a member. Without further ado, here is Marco. On the podcast today, I have Marco Maggioni, who has kindly agreed to share his OCD story. Welcome to the show, Marco.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
No worries. Did I get your surname right?
Yes, it's perfect.
Brilliant. Okay, so it'd be good to hear your OCD story in as little, as much detail as you want to go into.
Yes, of course. I remember having OCD since I was, 10 years old, or around that age, and I've suffered mostly from pure O.
Yeah.
So I have these very bad thoughts, and I tried desperately to neutralize them with compulsions. Mm. So I remember in high school, I wrote a lot of words, a lot of times deleting and repeating them, deleting and repeating, just until I succeeding in writing them without thinking bad thoughts, with the fear of, because I was fearing of these bad thoughts realizing, of course. And the same mechanism was with a lot of other actions, like walking. And so maybe I went back on my steps, and I also have some kind of counting OCD, and so I had to repeat the same action until I reached the right number, or yeah, what I thought was the right number. And after high school, I went. I decided that it was unbearable, and so I reached out for treatment. And I did 3 years of psychotherapy.
What was that? What therapy? Yeah.
Psychotherapy. Yeah.
How do you spell that?
Psychoanalysis.
Oh, like, psychoanalysis. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
Psychoanalysis. And but it didn't at all work.
Yeah.
And so I went to a psychiatrist.
A psychiatrist. Yeah.
Yes. That treated me with different kind of meds alongside with the ERP.
Yeah.
Okay. And this for 6 years. Oh. But also this experience was very successful, as I was very sensitive to meds, and so I had a lot of negative side effects.
Okay, yeah.
And I wasn't getting the improvement I was hoping for. And for sure, for me, the little improvement I had on my OCD wasn't worth all the negative side effects of med. So I arrived 3 years ago that I was pretty in a dark place, because I start thinking that there wasn't a solution for my problem.
Yeah.
And so I decided to take a very, very hard decision, maybe one of the hardest I took in my life. Mm-hmm. And that was to stop every treatment, to stop taking every medication, and to go to the cognitive behavioral therapist.
Yeah.
And as I wrote in the story, that also it's on your site, this is not an advice at all. This was very, very, very stupid idea. I was pretty desperate at the time with my OCD, and it was very dangerous for my health. I was very lucky that I had no problem in doing that, but this is absolutely not an advice for everybody, and everybody should, of course, listen to their doctors before making any changes to their treatment with medications.
Yeah.
But I did that, and of course things start to get worse, and I understand that I had to replace all the therapy with something else. And since I was very young, I was very interested in contemplative practice, like meditation, and in Buddhist teachings, and because I think that for one who has OCD, this idea of getting in some way control, some sort of control on your mind, is very interesting.
Yes.
And I decided to give it a try, seriously, because I never took meditation seriously, just with some like one times at a week. And so I decided maybe I was feeling that it could be a solution, and I gave it a try. And I saw that it started working almost immediately. And maybe in the first year, it had a slope of improvement slower. But then in the second year, so really go beyond my imaginations. And I think that meditation had on me two main effects. The first was that it reduced the amount of obsession by itself.
Yeah.
And I could see very clearly that the more time was passing from my morning meditation, the more obsession started to came. So there was some kind of relations. And the other was that it was easier to apply exposure and response prevention.
Yeah.
And because like I wrote you in our previous emails, you know, it's like in the Matrix movie when Keanu Reeves see these enemies very slow. Without meditation, I was like I was walking into a forest, and some obsession hit me in the head, and I can't even see where the heat came from. But with meditation, you see obsession come very, very slowly, and so you can do something about it.
Yeah, really. So. Yeah, I like that. That's a good way of looking at it, kind of like the Matrix, when he goes into that slow motion, he bends over backwards, right? When they shoot the bullet at him. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, great. Now, thank you for going into that. So when you did like psychoanalysis originally, did the psychoanalyst was he aware? Did he think it was OCD, or was he just kind of?
I don't know if he think about that, but he never said to me that I have OCD.
Yeah.
The first time that I heard that I have OCD was the first time I visit the psychotherapist.
Okay, yeah.
And that he said, yes, you have a clearly OCD, and we are going to treat you with meds and alongside with the ERP.
Okay, good, yeah. So, and I'm guessing psychoanalysis didn't make a bit of difference to your OCD, didn't help at all.
Zero difference.
Okay, yeah. I've never heard of it ever helping OCD. But did it have any kind of positive effect of any other area of your life, non-OCD related, or do you found it was kind of 3 years sort of wasted?
I believe that psychoanalysis have some benefits on some problems that somebody can have. Yes, for me, maybe a little helped in some part of my life, but not worth, of course. And my main goal was to have some improvement on my OCD. So.
Yeah. Okay, great. And when you did, when you went to the psychiatrist and they gave you meds and then CBT, that involved ERP. What was some of that? Because you said it was mainly sort of pure O, less sort of physical compulsions. What were some of the exposures that they were getting you to do, if you want to share?
Yes, of course. ERP is more difficult with this kind of OCD because we can't walk away from our mind like you can walk away from a sink.
Yeah.
But yes, part of my treatment was, like I said before, like writing and don't delete what I was writing, something like this. And the same with different action, and no matter what I was thinking, I didn't have to repeat them.
Yeah.
Okay. And now ERP is still a part of my life, but not really in
a rigid way.
In a rigid way like you do in a therapy. Just for me, now it sum up like to a rule, like whatever OCD tells me not to do, do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so when I feel that OCD maybe is checking me out, I think, okay, maybe now it's a good moment for making some exposure.
Okay, yeah. No, thank you for that. And so when you started to get into meditation, when you started to take it seriously, was it very hard at the start? Because obviously, I'm guessing you would have had a lot of thoughts coming at you. Did you find it challenging at all?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. But what really helped me was, and I want to mention also one thing, that there was one moment, one like light bulb moment that decided me to, when I have decided to take meditation seriously for OCD. And this is a link to your question, and this is where I heard a talk by Ajahn Brahm, which is a famous Buddhist monk, and I suggest everybody to check his book and his talks. And he said something that really fired up something inside of me, and he was talking about meditation and about the idea of compassion, and he said, the tree makes shadows also for to the one who are cutting them. And this is what makes a lot of difference in the way I start approaching meditation. I really believe that in meditation, the compassion and kindness part is important as the mindfulness part, and maybe I think more important. In meditation, kindness is the glue between you and the object of your attention. And this is what I think is too much not said in a lot of book and a lot of people who try to briefly teach how to meditate.
Yeah.
And this is what helped me with my mind, because of course when you start to sit on your cushion, also for people who have OCD, I think it's worst. You have like a storm in your mind because it's like you are stopping and you are trying to be still. And the more you try and you use your will force to calm your mind, and the more it go worse, and you have more and more thoughts. And so I was very lucky to understand at the beginning this concept. And so what helped me was this compassionate state of mind that really, really is incredibly powerful in decreasing the amount of thoughts and in calming your mind.
Yeah, really good point. I think compassion's come up a couple of times recently on this podcast, and it's one I'm trying to do in my own life. So what does compassion look like in practice with to do with meditation? How would you be keeping compassion in mind when you start to sit down on your mat or on your chair?
Yes, it's like when you start to sit down and there is a lot of things that maybe you don't like in your mind,
yeah.
And that are disturbing you, and you have a lot of thoughts. And this idea of irradiating kindness, and also you can do it like thinking good wishes to everything that is in the present moment. And also and mostly to the things that is earthing you in the present moment. This is what makes really the difference. And I really what gives you to OCD sufferer a very, very powerful tool and skill to approach their obsession. You know, this. If you think about what makes so difficult ERP, it's the whole idea of taking some amount of suffering now with the hope that it will make your recovery in OCD better in the long run is something that it's not really rooted in our brain. It's, natural selection designed us to chase what feels good and to run away from things that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
So you can see both meditation and the ERP like a rebellion against these behaviors that natural selection instilled into our brain. And all the, I think all the anxiety related problems can be seen as a result of these of a lot of behaviors that worked so well in an hunter-gatherer society, but that are not working anymore in our contemporary society. Yeah. And to link back the meditation, it's some kind of the same that in ERP, because if you try to have these not this aversion to things that you don't like and makes you suffer, and not this willingness to run toward things that you think as pleasant, you have this some kind of natural state of mind where you are, I think the key word is unconditional. You are unconditionally kind toward whatever is passing through your mind. And this makes a very important step, that you are taking a step back from your mind. So when you sit on the cushion with this state of mind, you start from a position where it's clear that you are not your mind. And so you can watch your thoughts and your emotion without engaging with them. And so they have less grip on you, and you can understand better how your mind works. And I think it is one of the most important things that meditation does.
Yeah, no, thank you for explaining that. And I like what you said about natural selection, how ERP and meditation are both rebellions against what comes naturally to our kind of monkey brain that wants to, you know, grab food and forage and fight and mate and whatever. I forgot what my next point was going to be. I'm drawing a blank here. I'll ask another question and then it might come back to me. Oh, that was it. That was it. So, you know, when I first started meditating and doing it consistently, I've been really bad recently, I have to be honest. I know almost every time I talk about meditation on this podcast, I say I've been really bad recently. I haven't been consistent for well over a year now. I need to get back on it. But when I was doing it consistently and I really started to learn to detach and act out with this as well, acceptance commitment therapy, to detach from my thoughts, diffuse from them. When you first, I almost had like an epiphany of, whoa, I'm almost kind of seeing my thoughts. Or you realize, oh, I'm not, as you said a minute ago, I'm not my thoughts. They're there. They're real, but they're not real in the sense of they are happening, but they're not me. I am not those thoughts.
Yes, this is something you understand very well in meditation because you see it for yourself. And I know that when, you know, a lot of time people with OCD listen, like you said just a minute ago, we are not your thoughts. We are not our thoughts. But this is something difficult to understand, mostly for us. And the reason why is that we also have stronger negative emotions attached with the thoughts. And this is what makes these bad thoughts so believable. And in meditation, you understand for yourself because you see that thoughts think themselves. And this is something that like is explained very well by one of the most important Buddhist concept, that the self doesn't exist, or that there is not a CEO self that think the thought, that do the action, and that take decision. And you know, a lot of psychologists, and in particularly evolutionary psychology, are subscribing the idea of a modular model of the mind, where there is not a CEO self, but there are a lot of different models that fire up and takes charge in depending on the situations. And this is, explains a lot why the whole idea of the ownership of thoughts and emotion is very difficult to understand, but you see it for yourself, these things that you are not your thoughts.
No, thank you. I like that. Yeah, I think, like, don't get me wrong, I'm sure you do as well. I still get very much caught up in my thoughts at times, and you know, I'll spend a few hours, whatever it is, getting anxious, getting angry, whatever the emotion is, and having the thoughts, and I'm fully in that, and I believe it. And in other days, I'll be so detached from my thoughts that my brain would give me a thought that's like really random or quite horrible, but I'll be able to laugh at it and detach and realize, God, my brain's weird. Why did it, like, it doesn't bother me. And I think, yeah, things like meditation can help build up that, the duration of times that you do have those windows of being able to detach from the thoughts and being able to laugh at them almost and realize it's just your brain kind of vomiting or having diarrhea. It doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Also, I think another thing, very important thing that I'm trying to working on now is to try to understand how to apply this concept that you learn in meditation in your everyday life. Because as you said, I'm not a monk. I'm a normal person. So we get hungry and we have work and we have stress. Mm-hmm. So understand how to apply these things when you are not on the cushion is, I think, very, very important for me now. Yes, I think the takeaway point are mainly two. The one is that if you stay in that space in the present moment, obsession, most of your obsession can't have a grip on you. And this is something explained very well in the book, My Everyday Mindfulness for OCD.
Yeah.
I know you interviewed the authors. And the other thing was the kindness part. If you are able to have this compassionate state of mind toward obsession, they grow smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's really incredible. It sounds something woo-woo, I know, but it's really incredible how if you are kind with something that is hurting you, at every act of kindness, it grows smaller and smaller and smaller. So it makes a lot of difference also in your ERP. If you are just mindfulness that, okay, I don't have to do compulsions, but I have a lot of pain because, of course, for the conscious mind, bad thoughts is very, very a strong pain. And just be mindfulness, I think it's not enough. And if you can do something to reduce it and to take action on it and you see instantly a good result, I think this is the path to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice. Okay, so, you know, for those that have never meditated or feel they've never meditated successfully, I know that's kind of the wrong attitude in itself. What tips do you have for those that kind of want to give it a go or feel the urge to do it?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the reason why I think there is also on the story I wrote on the articles on your website. I started a YouTube channel on meditation because I wanted to organize also this knowledge that I had summed up in years, and that I had a lot of doubts if was worth it or not to do. But the main thing is that I want to pass mostly to the ones that are approaching meditation, and that, like I said in the beginning, is something that too much time I read and hear from meditation teacher, I think in a dangerous way, is that you have to build your practice. When you think about meditation, mostly you think about breath meditation. And focusing on the breath is a part of meditation. But I think that if you don't underline the importance of building awareness before moving to the breath, and you start by try focusing on the breath and using your will to focus on the breath, it is very dangerous because it's very probably that you don't succeed and your anxiety get worse, and maybe people that do it for the first time start to think, okay, this is not something for me. But this is the mistake that most people do. The right way to meditate is to prepare your awareness before moving to the breath. The breath is just one step in the basic method of meditation. Okay, so first you have to I sum them very quickly, but first you have to build some awareness on your body, and so doing some kind of body scan meditation, and then working on your present moment, so you make sure that you stay in the now, and so you are not too much bothered about the future or about the past. And then you try to reduce the amount of thoughts in your head. And also there are various techniques to achieve that. And then you move to the breath. And also saying move, it's not really correct, because usually it's a process that happens by itself, because in meditation you start by being kind and being mindfulness about your body, and then your body is not demanding your attention anymore, and so you can move on something else. And so you move on time, you move on being on the present moment, and so you're not worrying about the past, you're not worrying about the future, and you are in the present moment. And after a little, also time vanishes. And then you move, what you see inside of you are your thoughts, so you focus on your thoughts, and the flow of your thoughts is diminishing. And after a while, your mind starts to vanish, and all the thing that is remaining is this, is your breathing.
Yeah.
And if you, in deep stages of meditation, the breath vanishes as well, and all it remains is you see clearly your mind and how your mind works. But this is something more advanced. And but this process, I know it sounds complicated, but it's very easy. Because you just are mindful and kind with whatever is passing in your mind and whatever is in your attention right now. And also, when I say this thing vanish and other thing vanishes, it's not something strange, but it's, you know, it's the natural working way of working of our mind, that when we get used to something, it go away from our awareness.
Yeah.
Like when you hear the humming noise of a conditioner, after a while you don't hear it anymore.
Yeah, good point. Okay, now thank you for going through that. I've got a few questions. So for those, I guess for those that aren't aware of what a body scan is, that's where you either sit there and you start from your head usually, right? And you just check how your head feels, how your ears feel, your nose feel, moving your attention down to your neck, how's my neck feel?
Exactly.
And are you letting go of any tension as you do that in any muscles?
Yes, you try to let go of the tension. And I just want to correct you on one thing.
Okay.
You always, I think you, but I'm not saying this, okay? Buddhist meditation teachers said this for thousands of years. So it's not something I discovered, just I want to underline it.
Yeah.
That there's also two actions that you have to do on everything. So on all your body, and then on the time, and then on your thoughts, and then on the breath. These two actions are to be aware and to be kind.
Okay.
These always go hand in hand.
Okay. No,
so you do these actions on all your body, and you release tensions. And if you have some tensions or some pain, you zoom in on your body until you try to find a way to release that tension and that pain.
Okay. So no, thank you. So with the kindness piece, so focusing on the body scan, if I'm scanning my body, How do I apply that kindness as I scan my body? Is it just kind of a feeling of, okay, I'm going to be kind to whatever comes up, or is there anything in particular you do?
Tough question. Yes, I think it's a skill. it is very helpful here to use some visualization.
Okay.
You may try to think to visualize maybe yourself saying good words to you, and what is the feelings that you have when you feel that somebody take cares of you. So we return to this whole idea of self-compassion, and it's like a fire. You know, it's like when you are building a fire, you are not building with this very big log of wood, but you start with little things, and then you grow up, and you have to do it in the same way. Maybe you, in the Buddhist kindness, loving kindness meditation, they do it exactly in this way. Maybe they start by thinking about a little pet or whatever for you is very, very easy to feel compassionate about. So you think maybe about a little cat that has a lot of damages and is angry and he needs your caring. And what is this feeling? And then you try to go to your friend, and then to the same thing to a loved ones, and then more difficult to an enemy. And this is very useful for assertion. And then the last step, that is the most difficult of all, is to apply this unconditionally kindness to yourself.
Okay, yeah. Yes,
it's an emotion. Yes, it's so.
True. I mean, loving kindness meditations can be good as well, because often you can get guided ones which are quite good. I think if people have got busy heads.
Yes, truly speaking, I never divided for me. I never sat on the cushion and I said, okay, this is going to be a loving kindness meditation, or this is going to be a breath meditation.
Yeah.
And I think this approach can be good for people with OCD, because I just start by saying, okay, I'm going to be mindful and to be kind to whatever my mind wants to show me.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the risk is that, and it's very big risk for people with OCD to become control freak and so say, okay, mind, you have to stay here and you have to watch the breath exactly for 10 minutes. This is a big risk, I think.
Yeah. No, good point, good point. Okay, no, that's good advice. Thank you. Is there anything people should be careful of or watch out for when meditating? With OCD, I should say.
Well, I think meditation doesn't have to become a compulsion.
Ah, good point.
There's a big danger.
Yeah.
And... I think it's better to not relate your OCD attacks with meditation, but to take meditation in your daily life. And so, sometimes in the morning when I don't meditate, I feel very vulnerable. And if you take in a more disciplined way, it's like going to the field and you are not fighting with your bare hands, but you are full of weapons. And so you don't have to transform meditation in a compulsion, but you have to use meditation to support your recovery from OCD.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, meditating because it aligns with your values and not because... Or it helped me that one time and I'm pretty anxious right now, so I'm going to meditate. Instead, kind of saying, actually, I'm going to try and meditate every day or every other day. And then that's more, it's less of a compulsion and more of it aligns with my values and my recovery strategy.
Exactly. Yes, of course. And then, we use meditation as a recovery tool from OCD, but most of the people without OCD use meditation for a lot of very good reasons, because I like to think that meditation has a lot of positive side effects. And so also if we approach these just for see if it has some result on our OCD treatment. It has a lot of very good effect that are on their own worth to try. And, you know, you become more calm, more stress-free. You have this approach that you are more willing to take care of yourself and the people you love, and you control more your reactions. And so...
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. There are many positive benefits to it as well, as you say. Positive in the sense of, obviously, if it helps with OCD, that's a very positive benefit. But, like,
yes,
as you say, just like other general things in life.
Yes, because for me, what it really makes the difference in my mind between meditation and the attempt of treatment that I did before was that there was a relationship between my practice and my improvement on OCD. Yeah. And I think this control that you gain is something that for me was incredibly important. It's like, you know, if you run every day, you are going to lose weight. If you don't run, you are probably not losing, you're not probably not losing much weight. And so this relationship of control is what makes the difference for me, because you take charge, and if you are willing to do it, you have some results. And so this relationship of cause and effects is what I wanted.
Yeah, excellent. No, thank you. Okay, so you may have mentioned this already, but just generally in your recovery, what was kind of the biggest epiphany you had, that kind of light bulb moment that kind of really helped you in your recovery? Was there anything that comes to mind?
Yes, it's not an idea, it's something really existential, that if you are kind with whatever is hurting you, it really grows smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, once I had a Skype interview like you with a monk, okay. And we was talking about meditation, and I talked about him of OCD, and he told me this a story that with this exact meaning I can tell you very, very quickly, yeah. Of an imperator in the ancient times that was outside of his palace, and into his palace walked a monster, a very big and smelly and bad monster, and his guards tried to fight with him and say, "Get out of here, you don't belong here." And the more they was angry with him and tried to push him away, the more it becomes stronger and bigger, and the worse it was. And then this very wise emperor yeah. walked into the palace and saw the monster, and start being kind with the monster and say, "Okay, monster, welcome. You can stay in my palace. You can stay on my throne for whatever time you like. There is no problem. You want some food? You can have some food. Can I bring you some tea?" And at every act of kindness, this monster grows smaller and smaller and smaller, until in the end it vanished completely. And I think this is a very good point, and this is what I talked about before in meditation. But if you apply this in your everyday life, when obsessions are there and they are so smelly and so bad and they are hurting you a lot, and of course there is this evolutionistic behavior of pushing them away, the farther you can push them away you want to, And if you try to take a different approach and okay, and say, okay, obsession, welcome, you can stay wherever you want, you can go away whenever you want, there is no problem, can I do something for you? It has exactly the same effect that with the monster.
Yeah. No, I really like that. There's a poem by, have you heard of Rumi?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah, so he had a poem called The Guest House, I think. And in that, he kind of says something similar. He talks about depression and he says kind of when it comes, don't push it away, invite it in, make it some tea, kind of just let it be and eventually it will leave on its own.
Exactly, yes.
And Alan Watts, the philosopher, he said the mind is like a muddy puddle. When you leave it alone, it clears itself. Whereas if you keep putting your foot in the muddy puddle, it keeps getting murky and dirty. But when you leave the puddle, the mud goes to the bottom and the water becomes clear again. And that's much like the mind.
Yes.
But yeah, I've never heard that story before. That's a good one. All right. That's a brilliant. That's definitely a good epiphany. And I like the idea of giving kindness to the things that hurt us.
Yes, if you think about it, this is what, if you, Tolstoy always wrote this sentence that in the end of religions said the same thing. Mm. And in some way, really all the religions have these concepts about being kind with the things that is hurting us and toward our enemies. And of course, this is something that go against what evolutionary selection instilling into our brain. And I always think about the movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I said it right.
Yeah.
in the last part of the movie, when the last task he had to do before reaching the Graal was walking in that big canyon and this whole emptiness and he can't jump and he have to reach the Graal that is on the other side. And he understand that this is a leap of faith that he have to do, that he have to believe. And so he start to walk and after a while a bridge starts to vanish. And I think this is maybe the most important part in recovery, but also in most part of life. You have to do that leap of faith. You have to believe that something is supporting you and that to reach the other side, you have to walk on that invisible bridge above the emptiness. And you have to believe it. Also, if all your senses are screaming to you that if you do it, very bad things is going to happen, you have to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's really good advice. And I think that absolutely applies to ERP as well. You know, your brain, OCD is going to scream and say, don't do that exposure. The handle's contaminated or whatever, and you're going to die. And obviously, part of ERP, as you said, is you have to do it anyway. You have to take that leap of faith. And trust the therapist and the process. And
exactly, this applies very well to ERP.
Yeah, really good advice. Okay, so I guess what would you tell someone just starting their OCD recovery journey?
Well, when I was, when I was young, there was more ignorance about OCD. I told you for a lot of years, I didn't even know that I have OCD because there wasn't a lot of information like now. And you don't have to arrive at a breaking point to understand that there is a different path. Yeah. But I will say that, of course, there is maybe this is something that's not very deep, but like in the book Brain Lock by Geoffrey Schwartz,
yeah,
he said having OCD is a curse, but get out of OCD is a blessing. This is something most of the book about OCD end up with. But I really think it's true. When you came out from OCD, it's like in some way you have a better understanding of your mind. You have a better understanding of how the minds of other people are working. And yes, OCD is a chronic disease and you can get worse at any time. But you know that people download the app about mindfulness with the bells to help them remind to be mindful. Okay, we have OCD that remind us that if we don't slow down, maybe we are getting too much vulnerable.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good price to pay.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you. Yeah, I like that. Okay, so do you have a sort of a favorite book or resource generally that you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, of course. I was saying my channel, but it was too much advertising and I don't want that. But well,
I'll put the link in the show notes to your YouTube channel.
Thank you, because I have a lot of doubt on them, but okay. I would love to, if somebody with OCD check it out and give some feedback, I would really, really appreciate it.
Awesome, absolutely.
But well, about meditation, I think the best book is Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond by Ajahn Brahm. That was that monk of that sentence.
Yeah, what was the net title of that again? Mindfulness.
Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond.
Oh, Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond.
Yes, this is the best book about the method of meditation, so it's a very practical.
Oh, okay, great. Again, I'll put the link in the show notes to that one as well. Mindfulness, Bliss and Beyond, cool. All right, brilliant.
If you want another very good book on more the evolution and the natural selection part of what we talked, the last book of Robert Wright, Why Buddhism is True, is all about them and all about that, and is very scientific. I really, really like his approach.
Oh, was that Why Buddhism is True, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I'll put a link to that.
The two things we have talked about today.
Yeah. All right, brilliant. Cool, thank you. So you live in Italy, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. you've got a billboard in wherever you are in Italy. What do you want written on that billboard for everyone to see?
Well, I think peace is the highest happiness.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I like it.
This is what I learned from OCD, that OCD, every day OCD teach me that I have to balance my values. And if maybe the biggest thing I understood is that, yes, peace is the highest form of happiness.
Nice. Yeah, really like that. And for those listening that want to, you know, live a good life, their best life, what advice or words of wisdom do you have for them?
For life in general?
Yeah, life in general, yeah.
Yes, it's to remind to do that step back when things are going in the wrong direction and you start to feel that you are losing control in your life. Remember that there is another path, and you can do that step back and calm yourself down and react in a different way instead of reacting in the way that your mind is telling you that moment.
Yeah, no, I really like that. Absolutely. As you said, it's important to take that pause, breathe, and then decide, is there a different path?
Yes.
A better path, yeah. Cool. All right. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to share or you want to say?
1 second.
No worries.
No, I think we cover it all. Yes.
Cool, fantastic. Well, yeah, no, thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me. I really, you know, appreciate your channel and all your. I think it's incredible, incredibly important. This spreading the knowledge and the stories and it what maybe if a lot it helps a lot the treatment, but also the more important thing is that people feel less alone.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, mate. It means a lot. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Marco, and all the resources will be linked over at theocdstories.com under the show notes for this episode. And don't forget, if you want to become a member and get access to Kimberly's loving kindness meditation she did, head over to theocdstories.com/join. A quick disclaimer, this podcast is not therapy, nor is it replacement therapy, and nor should it be. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we next speak, take care.